Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. Western media and politicians are obsessed with the idea of Ukraine winning. Say otherwise and you are maligned, accused of treason, and even canceled. The Ukraine must win trobe is actually about something completely different. It has everything to do with weakening Russia. Crosstalking Who's Winning, I'm joined by my guest, Martin J. in Marrakesh. He is an award-winning journalist and commentator. And in Sydney, we cross to Joe Loria. He's the editor-in-chief of ConsortiumNews.com. All right, gentlemen, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump in anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Joe, let me go to you first in Sydney here. Why is Western media and politicians obsessed with this trope? Ukraine is winning. Ukraine will win. Without any kind of serious analysis of the battlefield. Now, we could relegate that to experts on the military, but for the last 30 years, Western military experts have gotten everything wrong. So I think we're losing on all counts here. Go ahead, Joe.
Well, because the corporate media in the West has joined the campaign, the government's campaign, which is virtually clearly an American proxy war against Russia. This was evident from the very start on the February 24th, the day Russia entered Ukraine. Joe Biden gave a press conference and he was asked, why do you think the sanctions are going to work now when they didn't prevent the invasion? He said the sanctions were never meant to prevent the invasion. They were meant to tell the Russian people what he's done and to make them feel the pain. That's what this is all about. And then, of course, in Poland, he came out right out and said it. It's about regime change. In Russia, this goes way back to 1949 when the CIA took Mykola Lebed, one of the leaders of Bandera's fascist group, back to New York and used him for sabotage against the Soviet Union in Ukraine right through the Orange Revolution and certainly the 2014 coup. So the media is only given the Ukrainian side of the story. Ukrainian sources of Washington, they're leaving out huge chunks of this story, particularly that 2014 U.S.-backed coup in Kiev, the civil war in Donbass, the role of neo-Nazis, what the Minsk Accord was about, the NATO draft treaties Russia put forward in December. All of that is gone. You can't even discuss what the causes of this war are, which would include all of the things I just mentioned. You are then banned, as we were, from PayPal because of false information. You are branded, as you said, a traitor or a Putin puppet, etc., just for trying to write the facts about the war without taking either side, even just doing that. So you were left with a cartoon figure of Russia just being a monster that wanted for no reason whatsoever to attack this democratic country. And of course, as we're going to talk, I think, later about Zelensky, it's hardly a democracy, Ukraine.
Martin, more or less the same question to you, because Joe has actually put forth my thesis here, is that all of this can happen, and it can happen quite swimmingly when there's no context whatsoever. I talk to people privately, and I say, well, you know, we have to go back to 2014, the Minsk Accords and all that, and almost always is, what are you talking about? There is no context in talking about what's going on in Ukraine, and this is intentional. Go ahead, Martin.
Yeah. It's a nuance-free zone, unfortunately. Nuance and detail and relevant facts, which take more than 30 seconds to process, seem to have been just whitewashed out of the entire media equation when we look at Ukraine. And I think to answer your initial question, you know, people like Boris Johnson or Biden have invested so much in Ukraine. You know, going back to 2014, you know, where I think anybody who knows really anything about the history of the country, you know, Joe called it a US-backed coup. Even if you were to be kinder, there's certainly evidence of US meddling there to install the predecessor to Zelensky. And I think that these leaders, these governments can't lose. They can't turn round to their electorate now during price hikes, during energy costs going up, during inflation soaring, and people not being able to deal with new taxes being imposed on them, and say, hey, we've blown all this money and we might have got it wrong. They just don't do mea culpa. And media doesn't do mea culpa. Media doesn't correct the mistakes. You know, the Times newspaper this week printed a very impressive article about the ghost pilot of the Ukraine, naming him, you know, and apparently the Ukrainian commander's Facebook page just seemed to escape the attention of that journalist. Who, you know, the commander said, "Look, this story is nonsense. You know, it's a myth. It's been made up."
It's like the Snake Island myth, okay? Which still is making the round. It still makes the rounds. Amazing, okay? Yeah. Joe, I mean, let me go to Joe here. Joe, we know that the politicians in the West are being disingenuous because nobody in the West is talking about a ceasefire, how to end this conflict. As a matter of fact, just the reverse. They want to fuel it on. I mean, you know, there's, you have Milley, the Joint Chief of Staff, talking this could happen for years. And then you have the defense contractor saying, well, you know, we're here to serve. We're here to serve the Defense Department. I mean, you know, the powers that be seem to be quite gleeful, except for they don't seem to care much about the Ukrainian people. If you look at all of these speeches, the Ukrainian people don't really make the cut. Go ahead, Joe.
No, they don't give a damn about the Ukrainian people. They don't give much damn about the American people. This is a proxy war to weaken and destabilize Russia and to overthrow the regime, so they think, by sanctions and by bleeding Russia militarily on the ground and through an information warfare. And without Russia's entry into the civil war in Ukraine at the end of February, the U.S. couldn't launch this economic information and on-the-ground insurgency or flooding the country with weapons to try to bleed Russia, much the same way the U.S. did with the Soviet troops in Afghanistan. That Brzezinski has admitted in an interview that was a trap set for Soviet Union using the Mujahideen. I think it's the same thing in Ukraine. They've set a trap for Russia with using Ukrainian neo-Nazis in the forefront, Ukrainian regular military and Ukrainian people that they don't care about. And they will fight this war to try to weaken, if not bring down Russian government, which I think is highly unlikely. But the fear I have is that if Russia even sweeps to a decisive victory all the way from Donbass through the south in Odessa to the Romanian border, that is going to be a land and a possession difficult to defend. They will continue to send weapons there, and there'll be attacks that could go on for many, many years, perhaps. I think that's what the U.S. wants here, and they're going to try to bleed Russia and Ukraine. And I think this is what the strategy is.
Well, I mean, Martin, but that has to include the willingness of the Ukrainian population to go along with that. That remains to be seen here, because as Joe has pointed out, and I think it's so pressing to talk about this, is that there's a civil war going on in Ukraine as well. It's never framed that way in the West, but we've had this. You know, these tensions are going all the way back to the origins of Ukraine when it got its independence. You had very different narratives about what it means to be Ukrainian, Ukrainian history, relationship with the West, relationship with Russia, and now it came to blows. We had the illegal coup in 2014, and then we had the ethnic cleansing of the Donbass for almost 8 years. So, you know, this kind of narrative, you know, it's, you know, Russia bad, Ukraine good, Russia authoritarian, Ukraine democracy. I mean, it sounds nice to a Western audience. It probably gets 8 minutes of foreign news a week, okay? But it works to the powers that be, because this story is so much more complicated. And if you start explaining it, then people will start having questions, and that's not what they want. Martin, go ahead.
Exactly. And the last thing that big media in the West wants is people asking awkward questions. That creates a whole new narrative that could open up new avenues of opprobrium and scrutiny. And at the moment, you know, we're working in a period where Western media, particularly British media and American media, doesn't really want to look at any of those particularly incendiary subjects that Joe just listed at the beginning of that. You know, if we had journalists that were prepared to ask those really awkward questions, then that could create a completely different momentum in countries like Britain and America. And people might start asking some difficult questions themselves. They might start asking questions to America. For example, can we really afford $33 billion into a country the other side of the world? Most Americans can't even find on a map. I mean, it's ludicrous, this idea that Britain and America has this cultural or historical connection with Ukraine. I don't see it. I wasn't taught this when I went to school. You know, it's difficult to see where they're going with that now, other than removing Putin as a Russian leader. That was the long-term objective. And I think we're living in an era now, when we look back at history at the end of the 20th century and generations to come, people will say, this is the period of proxy wars now with NATO and with Western countries. We don't go to war anymore. You know, we send other people to go to war and to fight our, our fights for us. And Ukraine is very much, for me, a pub car park to have a scrap with people down the road that you don't agree with their views on, and you have your, you know, your own geopolitical objectives. And I think people in the West don't know that. They don't understand anything about it. They're not asking, they're not expected anything from their Western journalists. You know, the reference to nationalist, neo-Nazi groups fighting in Ukraine. How many people know that? How many people even understand that? You know, we fought two world wars against fascism, and it's very difficult for newspaper editors and owners now to sell this war with all the gruesome details that are going on, you know, but at some point they will know, you know. And my worry is, Joe, I think, pointed out that, you know, the real worry is where is this going now? Where is this leading? Does it lead to a nuclear solution, inverted commas?
Well, we'll talk about that a little bit in the second half of the program. But, Joe, you know, talking about all of this money, when, you know, you look at the middle class and working people in the Western world have been crushed for the last 40 years under neoliberalism, but there's plenty of money for Ukraine that is notorious being one of the most corrupt countries in the world. 1 minute before we go to the break. Go ahead, Joe.
Well, like I said, they don't care about the American people. Look at what Ukraine has been. It's a gravy train. It's a place for carpetbaggers. When the Soviet Union fell, they flooded into Russia and asset stripped the country, impoverished the Russian people, created oligarchs, and Yeltsin let it all happen. Putin came and stopped it. Here was Yanukovych, who didn't take the EU deal and wanted the Russian deal, and they probably saw that the gravy train that continued in Ukraine all those years could end. And don't forget, Joe Biden and Hunter Biden went in there afterward. It was part of this carpet bagging process. That is what Ukraine is for the West, and they don't want to lose that.
Well, certainly when the Pentagon comes out and says that it has no accountability of what happens to all of these weapons that are flooding into Ukraine. And I'll tell you, gentlemen, I visited Ukraine many, many times. Most journalists that write about it have never been there. Those weapons will end up being used against the West. Eventually, they'll end up on the gray market, the black market, instantaneously, because these are valuable weapon systems. And these are the people that are in control. The fact that they want to continue this war shows they have no respect for their own people here. Gentlemen, I'm going to jump in here. We're going to go to a short break. And after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on who's winning. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter LaBelle. To remind you, we're discussing who's winning. Let's go back to Martin in Marrakesh. Martin, one of my favorite films is Dr. Strangelove. I think I never get tired of watching it because I'm fascinated with history, geopolitics, and it's about my lifetime, okay? I see a new version, Dr. Strangelove 2.0, that even Kubrick couldn't even comprehend, about the level of stupidity and ignorance and arrogance when people talk about nuclear warfare. I'm astounded. Before we started our recording, we lamented the loss of Stephen Cohen, which warned us about this. Go ahead, Martin.
Yeah, I just think there's a pattern. I mean, Dr. Strangelove parallel is a funny one, but I just think there's a pattern that we're experiencing now when we look at Ukraine. If journalists of my age step back and look at what's been going on in the region and how America just creates an off-the-shelf package almost for international media when it goes into countries like Syria or even as far back as Iraq, the first Iraq war and Yugoslavia. You know, we get this massive oversimplification of the situation, where people explain to the media, these guys on one side wear the white cowboy hats and these on the other wear the black cowboy hats. And we saw it in Yugoslavia with Milosevic. Milosevic wasn't really quite the demon that he was painted to be, but he simply wasn't very cooperative with Madeleine Albright and others who tried to put a sort of US hegemony idea towards him in terms of finding solutions in the region. And in Syria, it was exactly the same thing. You have this oversimplification of the facts, this polarization of how we report on the news, journalists who can't cross from one side to the other. And the same thing's happening now in Ukraine. You know, everything has been made so simple for us to digest in the West. And journalists, there are so few, this is the worrying thing, there are so few journalists on the ground now in Ukraine who are dissenting voices, who are able to ask the more difficult questions. Hardly any recalcitrant characters, you know, like Joe in Sydney there, who are operating in the ground, because what will happen to those journalists? You know, we saw recently with the arrest of a Chilean blogger, Gonzalo Lire, who was detained by the Ukrainian security forces for a week. You know, that was a signal for me to journalists, to Western journalists. This is what happens to you when you break away from the spoon-fed narrative from the West and from our own public relations executives in Kiev on how you look at these stories. When you break away and you start asking difficult questions, you're going to face this kind of treatment. And I think this is the tragedy of this war. And it's a very sad thing. I think it was Goethe who said that the truth is it blinds those who look at it too brightly, almost like it's a light in your eyes. And I think it's very true in Ukraine. You know, we don't know what's really going on there. But your point earlier, Peter, about the arms and not checking on where these arms are going. You know, I've covered six war zones in my career, and I can tell you that corruption doesn't stop when a war starts. Yeah. Corruption actually intensifies, you know, and there will be plenty of international arms dealers on the black market looking to buy those American weapons and those British weapons before they even get off the ramp. Yep. They won't even end up in Ukraine. They won't even go to Ukraine. They'll go to somewhere else in the world. And we'll find out about this in years to come. You know, but who's getting rich? Why aren't the journalists asking these questions? Why aren't they putting Zelensky under the spotlight? How does this guy have all this money from being...
I want to talk about Zelensky in a little bit later. But, you know, Joe, I'm sure you saw it. Liz Truss, the foreign secretary, she had this big, big to-do over the weekend about how important Ukraine is. And just to you, both of you, you know, I read the speech. It was very difficult to get through. But I have one simple question. That no one seems to want to answer is that what is the national interest? What is the UK's national interest? What is the European Union's national interest? What is the American national interest in getting involved in this regional conflict in Europe? Do you have an answer for me, Joe? Because nobody in power wants to answer it.
Look, Peter, first, before you want to go to war, you got to make sure your domestic population is under control, that they're not going to cause you any trouble. If you can whip them into a frenzy, as we've seen, the for calls that means nothing to them, that even, as you pointed out, hurts them because $33 billion, rather than going for their health care and other social needs, is being squandered in a foreign country to help elites with their interests and to bring down a government that is no threat to the United States. I didn't read Truss's speech, and frankly, as you say, it must be very difficult to do that.
Joe, I read it so you didn't have to, so keep going.
Thank you. Okay. Yeah, exactly. I mean, when she identified part of the Russian territory as being in Ukraine, that was like the last time I wanted to hear anything from her. So I think that the scary part, as Martin was talking about, is you can't bring up anything to challenge this narrative because they need their population solidly behind them. And right now, the U.S. and Britain have, and sort of Germany, it seems like, as well, to some extent, France. I mean, this is a very scary moment when the sanctions put on Russia are actually having a worse impact on Westerners' lives than in Russia. This is something that is going to have to become evident, as Martin also said, they're going to get the truth eventually. But in the meantime, we have to slog through this and try to stay shut down as far as websites go and our journalism, continue to just try to hammer on the things that we've been talking about here.
Okay. Martin, you brought up Mr. Zelensky, the president of Ukraine. What do you make of him and his role here? Because a month into the conflict at Istanbul, there was a meeting with the Ukrainians and the Russians, and a deal actually made a separate program about it, possibly was in the making. His government seemed to be making some concessions, and then the next news cycle from Washington, no, you don't here. So what do we make of Mr. Zelensky here? And he's become very, very, very rich, apparently, according to a number of sources.
Yeah, we have to be careful. There's a lot of wild speculation on the internet. But we know from the previous investigations that he had at least $600 million worth of share options from his companies. That seems to be a fantastic amount of money for a comedian who, even though he owns his own production company, we're talking about a series of comedies on television which are broadcast and distributed for a long time only in Ukraine, which is one of the poorest countries in Europe. So I don't know how we understand how you acquire that kind of wealth. But my take, and I don't have anything to back this up, it's just my gut instinct. What I feel about Zelensky is that he's a puppet of the Americans, and he's been a puppet from the very, very beginning. I think they looked to back a second horse after Poroshenko. Mm. And I think he was the one that kept in reserve. I think they are the one who, I think they are pumping money into his media organization, and they groomed him from the very, very early days to finally take this role. And I think, you know, this is really what we're looking at. We're looking at, you know, these days we're living in an era of the West intervening and meddling in so-called revolutions all over the world, you know. And I think Zelensky was the perfect character from the beginning that they identified as somebody who could play the role and be completely servile into the West's direction. The question is whether he'll stay on message, whether he'll stay
I think I have to say it. Will he survive it? I think that's also in the cards here. Yeah. Joe, what do you make of him here? Because the one thing that I didn't expect. I mean, I wanted our viewers should be clear. I mean, I warned that this was going to happen. I warned in December, January, and February. Every single program I went over and over again. You're not listening. You're not taking this seriously. And then it happened. Okay. And Zelensky ended up being just as kind of, he's the media star of this. I mean, and this is what's happened. You have a battlefield in Ukraine where people are being killed. And then you have another battle, and it's all about media and cultivating this personality. And that's what makes this, you know, a parallel experience here. Go ahead, Joe.
Well, first of all, he's changing his opinion every 5 minutes. Literally in the same interview, you could see him say opposite things, that he will talk to the Russians, then he won't talk to the Russians. So you don't really know what his position is, but you do know he's under enormous pressure from London and Washington, absolutely, and probably from extremists in his own country. So he may have the right instincts. We don't know, but we'll never know because he's not allowed to follow them. He's a puppet. Of course, every Ukrainian leader is a puppet after 2014. They took over. The United States took that country over. It's part of the U.S. empire. It's basically a possession of the United States right now. They're fighting this war for the U.S. against Russia. It was an opportunity for the U.S. to fight Russia on the ground without the immediate risk of a nuclear confrontation, because right now Ukraine is not part of NATO, though it is a de facto NATO country where they got arms, training, exercises, so they have built it up as a de facto member of NATO and have used this opportunity to fight Russia. So this man, I don't know about his money, whether he takes cocaine or not. I really dismiss all that. It's not important. What's important is he doesn't lead Ukraine. He is a puppet leader, and anyone who continues to be in office will be that, including Poroshenko. Look at the tapes that have emerged about how Biden talked to him. We know that the U.S. is running Ukraine. This is the fact. So you can't really take seriously Zelensky, and what he really wants for his country, it seems to be irrelevant. It's what the United States wants for it.
Martin, we're rapidly running out of time. I'm going to make a prediction here. Article 5 will be tested in the immediate future. Because, now, the logic is, I mean, if the West is sending in arms to kill Russians in Ukraine, then the Russians have to say, well, you know, we're going to do something about that. And, you know, going across Ukraine's border to the West to stop that, I think is in the cards, unfortunately. And the nightmare of NATO will finally come to fruition, because does everybody want to go over into war with Russia because Poland wants to send arms to Ukraine? 30 seconds. Go to you, my friend. Go ahead.
I'm going to trump you. I'm going to take that idea even further. I've predicted in my articles recently that I think it's only a question of time before British and American soldiers are actually sent to Ukraine. And I think the reason being behind that is because at a certain point, the public in those countries are going to start complaining and start asking more difficult questions about why and how we can carry on funding that extraordinary amounts of money, pouring incredible amounts of money into military industrial complex towards Ukraine. And the solution that those leaders will then come up with at a later point is, well, we got it wrong, but this is how we should fix it. Now we need to send our soldiers there to finish off the job with the equipment that we sold them. And I think this is where it's heading. I think British Prime Minister Boris Johnson just recently sent 7,000 troops onto the borders. And I think the next thing that we're going to see in the next few months is actually a ground invasion. So that's what really worries me. And all for what? For a bigger long-term hegemony plan from Britain and America to pick off these little states, damage or weaken supposedly Putin, and to expand their geopolitical objectives. I don't think we can afford it.
Well, I can guarantee you the Russians will not, under any circumstances, lose this conflict. Chew on that, gentlemen, and our audience here. That's all the time we have. Thanks to my guests in Marrakesh and in Sydney, and thanks to our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, crosstalk rules.